Mr. Marzulli, thank you very much for coming to the Raw Feed, and how are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. I just flew in from Oklahoma City. I did a couple of television shows there and had about an hour layover in Denver and an hour and a half drive up Pacific Coast Highway, but I'm in the house. The fire's on. My dog's laying at my feet. I've got my headset and a nice little bottle of sparkling water here, so I'm ready to go, guys.
Well, very nice, very nice. Of course, were you weren't there for the earthquakes by chance, or were you just there over the weekend?
I was just there for the weekend. I just flew in on Sunday, came back today. But I heard about them, and very unprecedented from the citizens that I spoke to, at any rate. They're not used to this kind of stuff.
Yeah, that kind of rubble and makes it kind of go on. I mean, especially the times we're in. And, you know, in L.A., you know, can we get any closer to a biblical setting than what we have right now today? I mean, we have Syria. We have Iran. Talk of war, rumor of war. But yet something still feels like it's missing. What is your take on what we see right now? I mean, you've talked about these type of events, like in your book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. Are we missing the supernatural part of this yet? Or when do you see the supernatural taking place? Because for most of us, I think it's, you know, we see the saber rattling. It's back and forth. It's all talk right now in the world's governing bodies. But maybe you could share your thoughts of how you see the supernatural playing out in the events we see now.
Well, I see the supernatural, first of all, and we talk about this in Watchers 3, fingerprints of the supernatural. Certainly the Arab Spring, in my opinion, has a supernatural component. Why is it that millions of people across the Middle East decide to rise up now? I mean, why not 6 months earlier? Why is it orchestrated to where, you know, all the countries, basically, including Jordan right now, King Abdullah, is on very shaky ground? So we look at, you know, across the Middle East, we have Tunisia, and we have Egypt, and then Libya just fell. Bahrain is very unstable. Iraq's a quagmire. Syria's killed, they're saying 3,500. I'd put the number more like 10,000. We've got some unbelievably graphic footage out of Syria that we include in Watchers 3 because it's people need to see the barbarity that's happening there. And then you've got the saber rattling between Bashar al-Assad back to Israel saying, you know, if we're attacked in any way, we will rain bombs on Tel Aviv. Well, you know, Israel's just sitting there. Why, you know, why are you doing that? You know, it's like, what does Tel Aviv have to do with the fact that you've, you know, held your people down for decades and decades? You're a ruthless dictator. Why blame Israel? I mean, they're just sitting there, mind their own business. But that's the Middle East for you. And of course, Israel saber rattles back and said, we will reign. You attack us, we'll go after Damascus. And if you know prophecy, then immediately what screams at you is Isaiah 17, which talks about Damascus. That prophecy is 2,600 years old at least and has never been fulfilled. So the supernatural element, I would say, is already at play in the Middle East. There's another interesting development. Why is it now, after 3 years, that our president, which is a whole other discussion in itself, decides to withdraw the troops by Christmas out of Iraq? You would think that with the instability in the Middle East, this would be the time to keep the troops there as a buffer, just as a buffer, if nothing else. Withdrawing all the troops by Christmas, allegedly. Iraq is extremely unstable. It's always has been split between Sunni Shia and the Kurds in the north. And the Sunni and the Shias have certainly no love between them. In fact, that's where all the sectarian violence that we see erupting throughout Iraq. I think last week or 10 days ago, within 2 weeks, there were more bombings. And I mean, this just goes on and on and on. The Maliki government is extremely enervated. So that's on one level. Then I believe that some of the volcanic activity, earthquakes, and the tsunamis and the weird weather, there may be a supernatural component to that. Let me explain. And we read in ancient manuscripts, specifically the Judeo-Christian Bible, specifically from the book of Job, where it talks about that I call him the fallen one because that's what he is. And he goes after this guy by the name of Job. And he creates tornadoes. Fire falls from heaven and wipes everything out. I mean, there's a whole supernatural element to that book. And while I'm not saying every Category 5 and tornado and earthquake is a product of the fallen one, I'm saying that in military parlance, there's a phrase that's known as softening the objective. And what that means is you you soften the objective. You bomb the heck out of the place where you're going to go attack with your ground troops. You send artillery and, you know, aircraft in. You do everything to soften the objective. So when you finally have boots on the ground, it's not so hard. You know, you can get in there and get the job done. And I think that's part of what we're looking at. What's interesting, and I'll end this little segment by saying this, the American people are constantly being dumbed down. We are in the matrix, or as Chuck Missler calls it, the managed agenda. Whatever phrase you want to use, there is a deliberate obfuscation by the media to keep people unaware of, let's say, the massive flooding in Bangkok, which has gone on for weeks now, with sort of, from at least from what I get, no end in sight. The fact that the volcanic activity has got volcanologists extremely concerned. This stuff isn't going away. The rash of earthquakes. Then you've got the Fukushima reactor meltdown, which now you've got the China syndrome. This just came out this weekend, where that stuff's just going to keep going and going and going and burning through the earth and just continuing to fall. Obviously, it will pollute the groundwater. Obviously, that's going to contaminate the Japanese water supply, as well as who knows what it will do to the Pacific. I mean, I could sit here the rest of the night and just talk about where we are. But in my opinion, we are in unprecedented, tenuous, tumultuous times. And therefore, there's a prophetic statement. It's called the birth pangs. And I believe that we're in those birth pangs right now. I also strongly believe that the next event that we will see is some sort of a nuclear event in the Middle East.
Well, you know, and that's in, well, I think we all, I mean, we hear the saber rattling of that. This is for sure. Whether it's obviously with the inspections of Iran, they're trying to obtain them. And we, again, I'll use the word saber rattling back and forth. I want to kind of bring into some of the things that you covered, especially in regards to what skeptics would say to supernatural, to let's call them earth changes, things that have maybe have happened to our earth in the past. What do we say compared to biblical prophecy to those that don't look at biblical prophecy? They look at history and say, well, you know, history says that, you know what, we've gone through these earth changes before, so this is really nothing new. How do you address those type of skeptics?
Well, I think if we look at the amount of sunspots, for instance, that we're getting, the solar flares that are coming, the comets like Ellen, and there was all this brouhaha over Ellen, and I stated publicly well in advance that this was going to be a no-show, a non-event. Everyone was talking about a pole shift then. Look, stuff has happened on this planet before that's cataclysmic. I get that. And if there's one element for me that's a game changer, and it's a controversial subject, and for other people it's a hot button issue. But the fact that prophecy was fulfilled in 1948 when Israel became a nation, I realize that people look at that and you know, we can get down the rabbit hole with the Protocols of Zion and all this other stuff. But the bottom line is it fulfills prophecy. It fulfills the prophecy written 2,600 years ago, specifically that and found in Ezekiel 37 and in other places. And there's a huge supernatural component to that. Basically this, that the latter rain never fell in Israel for almost 2,000 years. In other words, you couldn't grow anything. And if you don't think that's supernatural, then, you know, scientists, well, you know, somehow the Earth's climate changed and now Israel's getting a latter rain. Hey, the latter rain was withheld pretty much from a diaspora in AD 70 when Titus and the Roman legions came in and wiped out Jerusalem until the modern era, basically the latter part of the 19th century. Almost 2,000 years. It's just unprecedented. And you couldn't, the place was denuded. I mean, it was a wasteland. It was a desert. Nothing grew there. With the latter rain, everything has changed, of course. So I think that there's a huge supernatural component. If Israel was not back in the land and the prophecy of Ezekiel 37 not fulfilled, I wouldn't be talking about this stuff. I would say, wow, this is pretty interesting times we're in, but it has nothing to do with prophecy. These are just earth changes. But when you look at Israel and then you look at, look, let me try this way. Yeshua, who's mostly known in the West as the name of Jesus, but he was a Jew, and his name is actually Yeshua. That's his name, okay? Jesus in the Greek. So whichever word you want to say this. And folks, I'm not talking religion, stained glass window, monks with funny haircuts, the Vatican and you know, papal decrees and the Inquisition and all the crazy stuff that's happened in the name of religion. I'm talking about one man who came down and did all these amazing, amazing things. And I think we have the Shroud of Turin as literally forensic evidence of the resurrection, but I digress. The bottom line, he gives us a prophecy, and he says that there will be wars, rumors of wars, famines, pestilence, earthquakes in diverse places, and troublesome times. Okay. Now, you see, in the modern age, we look at that, and we can track with that. But what most people don't understand, when that was written almost 2,000 years ago, there's no way to track an earthquake in a diverse place. If you live in London, let's say, right, and you're on a ship 300 years ago, and you sail down the Thames, and you go down the coast of Africa, and you're going to go to your outpost in Japan where you're going to trade, right? And it takes you 4 months to get there. And when you get there, you can't find the dock. Everything's gone. Something devastating, catastrophic has happened, right? And you finally find one of your guys, and he goes, oh, man, we had this unbelievable earthquake. It was huge. It shook everything, followed by this devastating tsunami. Okay? You take a pen and ink, a quill pen and ink, and you write on parchment. And you get the account down, you roll up scroll up, put some sealing wax on it, hop back in your ship, which is a sailboat, you know, a sailing ship. It's not a steam engine 300 years ago. And you go back around the horn, and it takes 4 months, if you're lucky, and you finally wind up in England. And you take the scroll, and you unroll the thing, and you hand it to somebody, and he reads it, and the information is disseminated mouth to mouth. In other words, there's no way until the modern era that we can track the prophecies by Yeshua 2,000 years ago. Now, if there's an earthquake, I've got my USGS report. Anything over 6.0, I automatically get a ping on my computer, on my iPad, whatever.
Sure.
So I can track the stuff. And see, that's what's so amazing about this. When Yeshua says this statement, there's no way to track it. How can you possibly track earthquakes in diverse places? You can't. I just proved to you that you can't. But now you can. Now when Fukushima happens, we're all watching this thing live. They've got helicopters. We've all seen the footage. You know, modern era, right? Helicopters over the tsunami wave going inland. It's unprecedented. The world we live in is small. We're linked up. We're synced together. We all experience, it really is a global village. We experience, or at least most of us, if we want to, can experience every, like, look, another example. When the Chilean miners got free, it's just this whole deal. And it's broadcast live. The whole world sees this. The Chilean miners, you know, live on TV, and the whole world is watching. Well, you know, when that Middle East bomb goes off, we'll all watch this thing together in absolute horror. This will be the supernatural trigger. This is when they show up. They will show up with two gifts, in my opinion. One, free energy. If you haven't seen the movie Thrive, which is on the other side of the aisle, they're already talking about it. They're already expecting the free energy. But the other one, and this has to do with the research that we've done with Dr. Roger Lear. He's in all three Watchers series. For those of you who don't know who he is, let me get a slurp of water here. Dr. Lear is a podiatrist. He's also a surgeon. Dr. Roger Lear. And about over a decade ago, he was, you know, asked to remove an object from a person. And very reluctantly, he went, and when he found out what it was for, supposedly the removal of an alien implant, he just got up and walked out of the room. You people are crazy. You know, don't bother me with this nonsense. I'll see you later. He was coerced by a friend, you know, please just come and look at it, please. Just, you're here, just look at it. There's something there. So he goes in, looks at the x-rays, and, you know, he's a total skeptic. He's got no UFO dog in the hunt at all. And he looks at the x-ray, okay, there's something there. It might be a BB or a piece of glass or a piece of metal from childhood, whatever. So he agrees to do the operation, and he goes in there. And right away he realizes he's not in Kansas anymore. There's the object, but there's like a secretion over the object that you can't cut with a scalpel. He finally takes this thing out, and, I mean, it's like unlike anything he's ever seen. Jump to the present day. He's done 16 of these implants. So we interviewed him for Watchers 3, Fingerprints of the Supernatural. And I said, you know, what's new? basically. And he told me, well, we took out the 16th one, and we took it to a machine shop to try to cut it open, and they couldn't put a groove in it with the hardest file that they have. They couldn't cut it with a diamond blade tip saw. We then took it to a laboratory, and they cut it open with laser beam. Inside, we found nanotubes. Before we cut the thing open, we discovered that it was running at about a clock speed of 300 gigahertz. The fastest computer on our planet runs at 3.5 gigahertz. That's almost 100 times faster than anything we got. I asked him, Dr. Lear, what do you think this thing is doing? Remember, this is taken out of a person who has claims to have been abducted by aliens. So we got a smoking gun. We've got something that makes no sense to us. We've got I've held this thing in my hand, okay? He's not making this stuff up. I've seen the photographs of electron microscope of the nanotubes. It's all there. I mean, the research is there. And without skipping a beat, he goes, well, they're changing it. It's changing a person's DNA, just like that. So we're also given this enigmatic passage in Scripture, prophecy, which talks about, in the book of Revelation, that men and women in those days will seek death and not find it. What, is that allegory? Is that metaphor? Or is it something more? See, it's all right there in plain sight. You could turn to that passage and read it for yourself. It's right there screaming at us. But there's other prophecies that talk about this mark of the beast. And for the longest time, we've sort of had a truncated view. And in the book, Cosmic Chess Match, I've really expanded on this. I believe that this chip that people will get, all right, and they will take it willingly, will extend the person's lifespan 300-500 years disease-free. Let's say you got shot with a bullet. Your body would repair itself. Your body would repair itself. There's a if you've not seen this video, don't go now, but after the show, go there. And Google on YouTube. Go to YouTube and Google Madness, M-A-D-N-E-S-S, Madness in the Fast Lane. And you tell me what we're looking at. You tell me why these women who were hit twice by cars doing in excess of 45 miles an hour get up, and it takes six people to take this woman under custody. And they did blood test work on her, and there's no drugs, no alcohol. What are we looking at here? And all this has been prophesied. I mean, we've only got 2 hours. I'm scratching the surface on some of this stuff.
No, that's okay. But one, that video that you just talked about, that was a pin thread. So, I mean, you know, we cover it all here first. That's why we're a very large site. You know, we get all that news first. That YouTube video of the gal crossing the freeway there, we have that one. And the Thrive videos were all pinned last week. So
great.
We're up to date on that stuff.
There
absolutely.
You go. Wonderful.
You know, I want to touch back on a couple things. You know, you talk about the occultism things that we see going on, especially in the background. And, you know, earlier today, me and Finn, you know, we were talking what we saw about today, you know, in our world. You know, so much, not so much obviously the music industry, for one. We were really talking more about the music industry and the occultism there that we're seeing growing heavy. It's always been there. We all know this. But we see a little bit more heavier emphasis. Now, how about the whole pedophile movement? Obviously, we have a big issue with Penn State. Okay, we know about the Franklin story. We know about some of this. But when we look at biblical prophecy and the things that are taking place, in regards to pedophilia, is this part of what end times had meant? Some people talk about it. Some people say this is where it starts to come about, that it's going to be so commonplace that we'll think it's no big deal. And as you can see by students rioting, right, without really understanding the issues, that they think it's no big deal, that some things are more important. How do you see that play out?
Well, it's all part of the end times mix, isn't it? It's just another sign that we're here. Also, with the pedophilia, it gets very dark. My colleague and friend Russ Dizdar wrote a book. You should have him on your show, by the way. It's called The Black Awakening, and talking about the rise of the satanic super soldiers. This all springs from the concentration camps in World War II, specifically from the work of Dr. Mengele. It's also referred to as satanic ritual abuse. But what it is you'll take a child, but through trauma-based mind control, you create an alter, a subpersonality in that person. I have actually met two of them. I know that, so I'm sort of a neophyte in all this. But I've seen one and worked with another, and it's it's interesting when you watch a person literally change right in front of your eyes. Literally change from, I'll just give you an example. The woman that I spoke to, I was up at a conference in Oregon about a month and a half ago. And this woman came up to me at the end of the conference. She had a baseball cap on. Her hair was tucked underneath it. She wore Coke bottle glasses. She had a ski coat on. She looked extremely unattractive. That's all I can tell you, with all due respect. She a very unattractive woman. Nice lady, but, I mean, in a sexual way, just extremely unattractive. I'm a married man. I'm not saying that I'm out looking for, you know, picking up women at conferences. Please don't misunderstand me. I'm just trying to give you, because it's going somewhere. She was just very unattractive, the way she presented herself. And she asked me about SRA, and I just said, well, you know, and I told her, spoke to her for a little bit, and, you know, I left and went and got dinner and came back for the evening session. And there was an incident. The person putting on the conference came up to me and said, there's someone here that's maybe SRA or a multiple or demon-possessed, whatever. So we got a team of us together, and we took this woman, and it was the same woman. And we went into a smaller room off site, so to speak, and we spent basically 2 hours with this woman. Now, when I tell you that that we had manifestations and that there was a form of deliverance where, you know, we had the demonic manifest, we did. There was a lot more work to be done. But what's interesting, and I say this, I watched this woman change right in front of me. She took off her jacket. She took off her hat. She shook her hair out. Okay, she's wearing this black tight sweater. She arched her back, and all of a sudden, there's like a seductress sitting here right in front of me, literally. And I just started chuckling to myself and said, oh, this is great. Now what? Because basically, we had another personality surfaced. The one that was there was gone. This was somebody else. I'm a neophyte when it comes to SRA. Russ Dizdar, in my opinion, wrote the book on it, literally. Dr. Greg Reed's another one who was actually an SRA survivor. As a small boy, he was taken and abused by a coven. He writes about this. Now he's in like his late 40s, early 50s. And so he knows of what he was. In other words, not like Russ was never involved in that. Dr. Greg Reed was involved in that. He's been through trauma-based mind control. He's been through the ritualistic sex magic, which is what they do. So, you know, this stuff, I'll tell you guys, it gets dark, and it's something that I don't willingly look for or want to travel in. When it's presented to me, I'll deal with it, but it's not something I go look for.
Well, you know, and that's the thing, you know, because it's mainstream, obviously the Penn State story is a very huge story.
It's
across the spectrum, because now you're interjecting the guy. And the reason why I say this, because you were talking earlier about the dumbing down of society, strategically how they're going in the Middle East, orchestrating. I see more social engineering with this is why. I see the social engineering saying whether which direction it goes, whether this leads to saying that it's okay to have this type of behavior because of how people are trying to express them. Obviously, it's not. In a lot of people because of the uproar about it. But this is what we're talking about, you know, about the social engineering taking place, because this is such a huge story that it's hard to ignore, especially when you start to see it in, again, biblical timing, things that are going on around us. How, when you put a look at this, do you see anything changing of the powers to be? Or do you think that whether it's the powers to be and social engineering, is this more of what we're seeing from the devil, a Satan. I'm trying to word this right, so not as to let it go religious or try to keep it straight, because, you know, here in a conspiracy site look on ours, it's going to be the powers to be, right? For those that are religious, it's going to be more of, we obviously know Satan's doing his work or the devil's doing his work. How do you see that playing out in regards to the social engineering behind the background? Is that humans doing social engineering, or is that the devil or some other entity?
Look, there's a dark cabal that has been in charge and working behind the scenes. we know again from prophecy that the mystery of iniquity, the secret of lawlessness, works and will continue to work. This thing's been going on for millennia. In the cosmic chess match, you see, the problem is, let me back up. The problem is, we live under a brass heaven here in the West. There is no supernatural. What everybody in this forum tonight, I'm sure, was taught at some point in their life, Darwinism. They're taught that this is how we all got here. Darwinism, they were taught this theory as fact, and it's just a theory. If we're intellectually honest, no one knows where we are or how we got here. No one really knows. And when Ben Stein, in his movie Expelled, sits down with Richard Dawkins and poses the question, where did the single cell begin? You know, Dawkins is kind of taken aback by that and goes, well, I told you, no one knows that. He's very effete, very aloof. Well, Stein goes, okay, well, where did life come from? And all Dawkins can say is, well, maybe millions of years ago in another galaxy, a race of aliens created us. And Stein goes, well, who created them? It's just, you know, I mean, it's an intellectually bankrupt argument, and it's intellectual fascism because he won't allow other people to have a different paradigm or a different worldview than what he has. And yet he can't prove his worldview, just like I can't prove my worldview. The Cosmic Chess Match was written to show people that we are in a battle, that the supernatural is real, that contrary to Darwinism and the fact that we're so starved here in the West for anything supernatural, that, you know, it doesn't exist. If you say anything about the supernatural, you know, you get the eyeball roll. Give me a break. However, in the last 20 years, people are starting to seek out and look for something because they have this inner feeling that there's something more. Well, there is. There's been a cosmic battle that's been going on literally in an unseen dimension for millennia, and it's now spilling out over into our planet, onto our planet. And it has spilled out onto this planet before. The enemy, the fallen one, when you say the devil, people look at you and they laugh. Oh, please. You know, no, we're talking about an incredibly powerful created being, evil beyond anything we can imagine. The guy is just a sick, one sick puppy. But it's not a little guy in a red devil suit running around. This is a very powerful entity, extremely powerful. And he's brilliant. He's a twisted, demented genius is what he is. And he's also called the Prince of the Power of the Air. Now, I don't know whether you guys saw the Decoded, Brad Metzler's last Decoded thing on the Spirit of Destiny. I watched it this morning in my hotel room. And I've been very familiar with the Spear of Destiny. This is supposedly the lance that pierced Yeshua's side while he hung on the cross after his death. Whether or not it's the lance that did that, no one really knows. But Hitler thought it was and used it as a talisman, so much so that when he first came to power, he went to Vienna, and the first thing he did was he got the lance, the Hegel lance it's called, because of the Spear of Longinus, knowing that if he could get that lance, whoever possessed it would conquer the world. So, cut back to Brad Metzler's Decoder. There's this guy on who used to be a bodyguard, and he talks about this man that he wouldn't tell the name on the air. This man was extremely powerful and very wealthy, and apparently this man had stolen the Hegel lance, the Spear of Longinus, and smuggled it out of Germany at the end of World War II. Now, get this. According to this man, he was told by another bodyguard who was protecting this other man who met with this ex-German patriot, right? And he was saying that these people are the sons of a Nephilim, the Benayach Nephilim, the sons of a Nephilim. And they worship Lucifer, and they believe that the God of the Bible is actually an evil God. It's completely twisted. Now, that just came out on Brad Metzler's Decoded, and this guy's obviously risking something to go public with that. I found it very interesting, and I've got to do more research before I'm trying to get the guy myself and talk to him. But it confirms what many of us believe, that there's a cabal. Look, Dr. Stan Monteith has written a book called Brotherhood of Darkness, and he talks about the same thing. There's a cabal of men and women on this planet that are given over to dark Luciferian forces. There's a chapter in the Cosmic Chess Match, which is called The Luciferian Dialectic. And I'll just give you a brief overview of that again. You know, I could go on here for another hour just on that. But I actually, that's in the Cosmic Chess Match. And a dialectic is three parts: conflict, counter-conflict, and then synthesis. and a Luciferian, you know, it all stems from Hegel. Hegel's a German philosopher. So the Hegelian dialectic was conflict, counter-conflict, and synthesis, resolution. A Luciferian dialectic is the same thing, except there's a supernatural aspect to it. The conflict is 9/11, okay? That's the initial conflict. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we look at 9/11, and I know your audience is extremely hip with this stuff, all we got to do is look at Building 7. You know, I mean, and now it even Judge Andrew Napolitano on the Fox News Channel, one of my heroes, has come out publicly stated that something's wrong with that. We need to do a congressional investigation on it. I've got a lot of trouble with 9/11. I believe in the Constitution. 9/11 is a bizarre event. That's the conflict. The counter-conflict is we go into Afghanistan to get the terrorists. And, of course, the Patriot Act is written from that, where I believe that we – and all the TSA nonsense at the airports, which I went through, you know, twice this weekend. And we're over in Afghanistan, and all seems to make sense. But all of a sudden we go, whoa, wait a minute, and we move into Iraq. What the heck is that about? Why do we really need to go to Iraq? He has, you know, weapons of mass destruction. Well, we know he gassed the Kurds. That's a matter of historic record. We know that. What, 20,000 people, whatever, I forget the number. But thousands of Kurds were gassed by Chemical Ali. Okay, I get that. The guy's a madman. Okay, I get that. But why do we have to go into Iraq? I mean, what's the point? So we go into Iraq. That's the second leg of a dialectic. The conflict is 9/11. Second leg of a dialectic, the counter-conflict, which is Afghanistan. Then we go into Iraq, all right? Get this. We know from prophecy that the Antichrist will cut a deal with the Israelis, with the Jews, to rebuild the temple on the Temple Mount. Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We also know that the King Abdullah of Jordan is a Hashemite king. Hashem is the uncle of Muhammad. So King Abdullah traces direct lineage back to the Prophet Muhammad. He holds great sway in the Sunni and Shia world. He's the king of Jordan. But the Hashemite kings after World War I, and people don't understand this, most people, because they don't do their history, their homework. But after World War I, the Ottoman Empire was carved up into the modern states that we see today. Syria, Lebanon, Israel, which was Palestine, Transjordan, which is Jordan now. It was called Transjordan at the time. Okay, and Iraq. All those nations were created out of the Ottoman Empire. The boundaries were created by the English and the French, carved up, okay? So the king of Jordan, or the Hashemite kings at that time, ruled in Syria and Iraq and in Jordan. The Ba'ath Party came in and deposed the Hashemites in Syria, and we all know what happened after that, and, of course, Iraq. So Jordan is Palestine, and Palestine is Jordan. You can go back and look up quotes from in around the 30s, the 40s, all up into the modern era, where people, in fact, Jordan right now is populated 75% Palestinian. That's what it is. Jordan is Palestine.
You know, LA, real quick, how about Muslim Brotherhood? We can date them back to quite a few thousand years ago as well.
Well, not the Muslim Brotherhood, no. But Muslim Brotherhood is extremely new. Now, you can trace them back into...
If you go back to the Muslim Brotherhood, though, no, you can go back to the Lords or the Lords of Sign, which they're tied to, which goes back almost back to the 1400s, especially to their ties to the Brits. So, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I hear different conflicting stories about the Muslim Brotherhood and how long they've been at it, which is another big part of this.
Well, that's a sidebar. Let me get to that, but let me finish the dialectic with the King Abdullah, okay, because it's interesting. Abdullah also holds the keys to all the sacred places in Islam. Okay, he's the controller of Mecca and Medina, and of course the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. When the Iraqis were penning their constitution, King Abdullah offered to set up a constitutional monarchy in Iraq. He was rejected. So here's the scenario for you: we get the Ezekiel 38 prophecy, which I think we're looking at. It's screaming at us, in my opinion. In other words, war breaks out in the Middle East. We see a live nuke go off. The peacemaker Abdullah comes in. And remember, Iraq is extremely enervated. Now that we're moving our troops out of there, the Maliki government was propped up by the United States. What happens to the Maliki government? They're going to need a strong man. So we know the conundrum in the Middle East has been the Palestinian-Israeli issue. We all know that, right? It's obvious. It's right. It's screaming at us. That's what it is. Abdullah, this is a scenario. Okay, this is my scenario. It's not prophecy. But if it happens, then we have looked at a Luciferian dialectic because it's the synthesis of the first conflict and counter-conflict. This whole thing has been to get to this point. Abdullah is the one guy in the Middle East who can change everything and do it overnight. He could cede Jordan to the Palestinians as their homeland. He then could look at Israel and go, because he controls the Temple Mount, remember that. King Abdullah controls the Temple Mount. He could construct a wall between the Dome, and the Temple Mount's 40 acres, so there's plenty of room for two buildings there. He could construct a wall between the Dome of the Rock and the Jewish Temple. And if he does that, guess who he is? And if all that happens, and he actually becomes the king of Iraq, then I believe we've witnessed a Luciferian dialectic. Now, it's too late, to, you know, or it's too early to see that. But then we're getting back into your point with the Muslim Brotherhood. Modern history traces it to this one guy back in the 20s, but I agree. You can take the Muslim Brotherhood and you can go back further back into the assassins where they were hashish eaters, and they were a band of assassins. Correct. And that's where it goes to. And with that, I would agree with you wholeheartedly. You can trace it back to that, the time of the Crusades.
You know, I want to go back, and you mentioned it, and it's that one thing, the Nephilim. You know,
sure.
Actually, no. Let's talk about why today's churches or religions ever touch about the Nephilim in the Bible. I mean, they don't. You know, I'm getting ahead of myself. Hold on, I better not. Why don't you, you know, give us what you know and how you've talked about the Nephilim in your book, and maybe you can answer my question later on about why churches do not specifically touch that. But if you would, you've written a book about it. Talk about us about the Nephilim.
Well, I've written about the Nephilim in all six books. We talk about them on and on and on because this is, look, this is the end game, folks. Remember that little chip that Dr. Roger Lehrer took out? That's going to change your DNA. And that will make you Geborim or Nephilim. Now, you know, I realize that by saying that, I put myself way out on a limb. I understand that. But it's changing your DNA. We know from the book of Revelation, it says very specifically, anyone who takes the mark of the beast winds up in the lake of fire. Gee, that sounds harsh. What the heck's with that? Where's the love there? Doesn't seem like there's any love, right? Then we also know when we go back into Genesis 6 that the flood wipes out everybody. Well, what the heck's that about? And then we go to Sodom and Gomorrah. Why is that wiped out? And then when the Israelites go into the Promised Land, why are they given the decree to wipe everything out? Everything. Burn everything that's there. That sounds like a maniacal, homicidal, crazy God to me. Unless you plug the Nephilim in. The moment you don't have to twist the scripture, it's there. When the spies go into the Promised Land, what do? Come back and they say, we saw the Nephilim there. In other words, the same thing, the fallen angels, right, the B'nai Elohim, the fallen angels, began to have sex with the women, and the union, the byproduct of that union, were the Nephilim. In my opinion, that's what it was. Other people agree with me on this. And I, you know, too many names that are, you know, I could mention, but I'm not the only one. I stand on the shoulders of men like Dr. I.D.E. Thomas and Pember and others and Clarence Larkin, people that are, you know, some have deceased, some are in their 90s, but they plowed into this field, well ahead of me. I've just taken the plow from them right now, and that's what I do. This is the event. This is what he's done. When you look at the breeding program, the so-called extraterrestrial breeding program, the abduction phenomena, there's similarities there between that and the same thing that happened in Genesis 6. Why does Yeshua warn us that it'll be like the days of Noah when he returns? What differentiates the days of Noah from any other time in history, in my opinion, is the fact that the B'nai Elohim, the fallen angels, were on the earth. And the same thing's going on now. Is it the same as it was six, 8,000 years ago, whatever, whenever the flood was? No, it's different. It's a different, slightly different, reworking of it, but it's the same deal. Look, I asked Chuck Missler, for Watchers. Watchers 4 will probably be on the Nephilim and UFOs and the whole deal that way as sort of a polemic against the History's Channel Ancient Aliens, because they're just driving the ET as our progenitors. That's their whole deal.
And that's what I was just going to ask you. That's what it seems like to me. It seems like a lot of that's what they want to project, is that no, the fallen angels are aliens.
That's what they're, Well, that's what they're promulgating constantly. And we're going, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. There is another paradigm. Let us show you what it is. Watchers 1, 2, and 3 hint at it. Watchers 4, I really think that's what we're going to be working on and showing people that there is another paradigm to look at here and consider before you just jump into the ancient astronaut thing. Because that could be, in fact, what I call it, the coming great deception. And I think it's coming, and I think it has been orchestrated for thousands of years. We're in a cosmic war here, folks. We are in a matrix, literally in a matrix. This reality that we perceive is really not reality. There's a greater reality that supersedes this one, a super reality, where these beings reside. But, you know, I digress. So the Nephilim are the byproduct of the fallen angels and the women of Earth. And this goes back in the Revelation. You get that chip, right? Why? Because now your DNA is being changed. This is exactly what he's wanted. When I sat down with Chuck Messer, getting back to Chuck, I asked him, do you believe that there are modern Nephilim? Now, Chuck didn't have to think, you know. The moment I asked that question, he just went, this is how he did it, and I'll imitate him. He went, sure, Satan's out number 2-1, he's building an army. That quick, that fast, bam, just like that. Sure, Satan's building an army. He's out number 2-1. Just like that. Just like that. Bam! No hesitation. You know, he didn't have to think about it because he, like myself, we both travel in the same thing. We're looking at this and we believe that the Nephilim will manifest at some point on this planet.
And that's the thing about it, and that's why I'm glad you hit into the History Channel, because that was my other question I was going to put to you, because, you know, they put such a – I'm not going to call it a spin. I mean, they put it together, and it gives you just another reason to believe or to look at, to say, oh, well, you know, these ancient aliens, they've been around for a while. They predate the Bible, and but when reality, that we can see a part of it, how they could be fallen angels, you know – when you see something like that, do you think History Channel is type of a social programming or social engineering product?
Well, let me ask you this. It's Prometheus Entertainment. Who's Prometheus?
Okay.
Right? I mean, it's there it is. It's like, look, when I was on season 1 and season 2, they invited me to come back for season 3, and I told them, why do I want to come back on your program when you manipulate everything I say? You're disingenuous. I'll tell you what happened. They interviewed me, for the art, the ancient UFOs in, supposedly ancient UFOs in, sacred art, Byzantine art from like the 14th century, whatever, right? And I did my research and I said, well, the problem was, and I showed one of the paintings that everybody goes to. It looks like there's a disc with a light coming in. That's shining on the forehead of this figure who's supposed to be Mary. It's the Annunciation, right? Well, everybody says that's a UFO. Well, it's not a UFO. What you're looking at is a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy, and it's been so degraded that you can't see the original artwork. What it is a cloud with a bunch of angels sticking their heads over it. It's not a disc at all. It's a cloud with angels. Now, the reason, remember, we're in the modern era, and video is king. But in the 14th century or the 13th century or the Byzantine art era, whatever, Middle Ages, that whole period of time, the artist had one frame, one shot, right? One shot to convey what he wants to convey. Now, a triptych, three paintings together, could convey three, you know, separate thoughts sometime or a continuation of the same thought. But most artists painted one painting. And in that one painting, he would try to convey all sorts of information. And that's what he's doing. He's trying to convey a mystical event 1400 years after the event happened, and he's got one shot to do it. So what do? You know, just think about that. He's trying to paint the Annunciation. He wasn't there, and at this time he can't read the Bible, so people were telling him about this stuff, and he paints his painting. And he, you know, has a ray. So it's like this is supposed to be some kind of communication between here and heaven or whatever, but it has nothing to do with UFOs. So the History Channel took my whole segment, and that was season 1, and they cut it, completely cut it, and they brought in another guy who gave them what they wanted to hear, okay? And that because they did that, it bounced out their production schedule 2 weeks, and so it didn't air. The other thing was they interviewed me for 3 hours the first season, 2 hours the second season. I wound up maybe 3 minutes on the show.
Well, you know, now I'm going to turn it over to the other host for tonight, and that's going to be 2342. 23, go ahead and take it away, bud.
Hey, Ellie, I wanted to ask you some personal questions to kind of help us understand your writings better and your work. It sounds to me like you're a firm believer that the Watchers or the ET phenomenon is actually more of a, I guess what you would call them angels then?
Well, yeah. I mean, in the same way that you would call, the analogy is this, that we're all human beings, right? But there are human beings that have used our brain or their brains and their gifts for evil. Adolf Hitler being at the top of a list, let's say, right? So he's a human being? Of course he's a human being. Is he an evil guy? Of course he's an evil guy. I think we can all agree on that. But he's a human being. Well, these are angels, but they're fallen angels. They've left their first estate. And because of that, and because of the rebellion, this is what the whole cosmic chess match is about. This is what the war in heaven is about. And so these are fallen angels, but they have the same properties and the same abilities as the good guys.
And so you don't – so basically, though, technically that would make the Watchers or the angels extraterrestrials, right? Because they're not from this planet. You're saying they're from another dimension,
right?
Which could very well be another time or place in space. So do you also agree fully with the Abrahamic teachings such as the texts in the Old Testament and the New Testament?
Well, I mean, it depends on what you mean by that. I'm not sure where you're going with that question.
Like, for example, let's get into Genesis for a minute.
Okay.
Genesis talks about how God created the heavens and the earth, but when you read the text, the original text, it says the gods created the heavens and the earth, and they created man in their image.
Yes.
So, And as far as like these craft that you see and these microchips and these implants that you're talking about, that is mm-hmm. this incredible technology that is beyond our public domain. Do you see any of this as being extraterrestrials, or do you see all this being intervention with angels in the heavenly realm from that place?
The easy answer to that is it'd be so simple if it was just extraterrestrial, if Dawkins' belief were actually true, or if the History Channel with their ancient astronaut theory was true, that would make a lot of sense. But all my study points to exactly the opposite, that what we're dealing with are extremely nefarious beings that are here. Look, just look at the abduction phenomena. Look at the cattle mutilation phenomena. Look at the human mutilation phenomena. I mean, you know, this is very deliberate. This is evil. When a human being is mutilated like that, in the same way a cow is, that's bizarre. That's bizarre. And I've a friend of mine, Chuck Zukowski, you know, talked about that. Got the autopsy reports from the human mutilation of the guy back in Brazil. I mean, it's very, very alarming. And this man was mutilated very similarly the way the cattle are mutilated. When someone is taken at night, sexually molested, that's kidnapping, molestation, and now they have an implant in them. I mean, you know, that's evil. That's evil. And the other side of the aisle will go, well, their ways are far above our ways and we don't understand them and, you know, their morality. Baloney. You know, they live off the fear. They live off the fear. They thrive off the fear. They know exactly what they're doing. When we look at, again, this goes back into the whole idea of a cosmic chess match. There is a coming great deception, and here's the deal. And this is why it all ties together, and it goes back to Ben Stein and Richard Dawkins. In order to create a new paradigm, a new world order, a new thought process, a new paradigm, a new worldview, you first must undo the existing worldview. The existing worldview here in the West has been Christianity, a Judeo-Christian worldview for thousands of years. That's what it's been, okay? And am I, you know, has it been maligned and twisted and screwed up with things like the Inquisition and what we did to the First Nation people? Of course it has. It's just all in the name of Christianity. Well, it's crazy. And I will certainly cede that point immediately. It's horrific what was done, right? But the bottom line is that the basic principles governing the West have been based on supernatural events that happen in the Old Testament and the New Testament. Case in point, we celebrate Christmas. The birth of the God-man, Yeshua. The virgin birth of the God-man, Yeshua. Now, Christmas trees, mistletoes, Yule logs, and all this stuff is all part of the Babylonian false religious system. Yeshua was not born on December 25th. That's a pagan festival known as the Saturnalia, which has been reworked into, you know, here we are, Merry Christmas. Well, what does that have to do with anything? Right?
Well, is just
good.
I'm sorry, but it isn't also the drinking of his blood and the eating of his flesh when you go to church and eat the bread and drink the wine or the water, isn't that also a pagan ritual?
Well, no. The thing is, first of all, you're not eating his blood or drinking his blood or eating his flesh. It's symbolic.
Exactly.
It's symbolic of something. So it's a whole different deal. And he says, do this in remembrance of me. And you've got to, in order to understand what he means by that, you've got to go to a Jewish Seder, a Passover supper. If you've never been to a Passover supper, it's lost on most Christians because they've never taken the time to see in the context in which he says all that. He's saying it in the context of a Seder, a Passover supper. And when you do it in the context of that, it's like it comes alive. Whoa! It makes so much sense. But without the Seder, it remains this mystery, this sort of obfuscated thing. And the Catholics, of course, built this whole system with all due respect to the Catholics here. I don't have an axe to grind with them. I just don't believe in the transubstantiation. They have to have a priest which somehow magically turns the wafer, you know, and the wine into the blood. And I just don't believe that. I think that's, in my opinion, it's absolute. I don't want to use the word heresy because that's probably insulting to Catholics, but in fact, that's what I really believe it is. With all due respect to them, that's my own personal belief. I'm just telling you what I think and what I feel. You don't need a priest if his sacrifice was once and once for all. But see, getting back to shifting the paradigm, Darwinism and Darwin goes against the paradigm. Darwin sets up a new paradigm. Darwinism challenges the prevailing worldview and paradigm that's been in the West for 2,000 years, okay? And it's chipped away at it. Now we've got a vacuum. And when Stein asked Dawkins, here's my case in point. Dawkins says, well, maybe E.T. created us. He's already there. He's already bought the so-called coming great deception, hook, line, and sinker. He's already believing it. This is what he's promulgating. I find that incredibly alarming. Incredibly.
Well, I know earlier you said that we're in, you know, a matrix per se, and it does, if you get into, you know, the molecular structure of matter, we are in a holographic universe, as you would say. So,
Chuck,
you know,
Missler, right?
But let me ask you this, because the reality that we live in order for there to be balance, there must be an opposite and equal reaction to every action that takes place. And when you look at the works in, let's get into the New Testament. Let's don't even deal with the Old Testament scriptures. But for example, Revelations, which you seem to put a lot of merit into, and so do many people that are Christian. I've read Revelations multiple times. As a matter of fact, I read through it today. And, let me ask you this first. I'm going to digress a second. Do you believe that, with the research that you've done, that the people that pretty much control the media and the resources, the food, the water, you know, the governments, the militaries, do you believe at the very top levels, at the apex, they're all in it for one thing, for the fallen one that you call him?
Well, you're painting with an extremely broad brush. I believe that there is a cabal. I'm not sure to where it extends and to how much it extends, but I would say it's there. It's there, and it's a managed agenda. There's no doubt in my mind. There's a managed agenda, as Chuck calls it. They're going someplace with this stuff, and it's very, very deliberate what's going on now, specifically in America. They're trying to break the back of this country, and they're very close to doing it.
Well, and when you talk about, you know, the different things that are taking place right now with the Arab Spring, for example, the riots that took place over there in the Occupy Wall Street, which is using similar tactics, you know, you can clearly see that the powers that be are trying to take down Western society and get rid of religions and bring in this utopian singularity with the Venus Project, a.k.a. Zeitgeist movement. And, you know, and you're also talking about the manipulation of human beings. And I do a lot of research in nanotechnology, and you can clearly tell that they're pushing to turn us into a Borg-like species with, you know, I mean, they're transferring transistors into human living cells, turning living cells into semiconductors in the brain. So that all of this stuff is, you know, I agree with a lot of what you're saying, but the thing that worries me is the aristocrats of yesterday are the same people that rule the world today, and it's been like that family lineages for thousands of years. So do you ever get worried that the people that actually wrote the Bible and translated it and edited it and added stuff and took out stuff and decided, okay, we're going to allow these books to be put in and we're going to take these books out. Do you ever worry that those are the same people that are pulling the strings today, and the reason all of these prophecies are taking place is because they actually run the system, and they're very good at numerology, and they are into, you know, certain things happening at certain times, and with their technologies of supercomputers and whatnot, they can predict what's going to happen before it happens, and they orchestrate this at the top levels.
Well, let me put it to you this way. When we're in an age where it's unprecedented, we're living in a time in history that's unprecedented. And with the advent of the computer and the technology that we have, you know, we're not in Kansas anymore. We all agree on that. But there's a prophecy that says from the Old Testament, from Daniel, that men will run to and fro over the face of the earth and knowledge will increase in the last days. And if we were to draw a graph from that time, 2,600 years ago, till the modern era, we would see that it's basically flatlined to the Industrial Revolution. And then, you know, it kind of jumps up a little bit. But then from the modern era, it just goes exponentially through the roof. We're there. And that prophecy is written 2,600 years ago. If there is really, if the prophecy is true and it's there, and we've got things like the Shroud of Turin, which may be direct forensic evidence of the greatest event on the planet, which in my opinion is the resurrection. And again, you know, you talk about this stuff, religion has just obfuscated the wonder and mystery of it to a greater extent. Those promises, those prophecies give me hope. Without hope, you can't live. And so, look, I come from the other side of the aisle. I was immersed in the New Age. This is all written in the Cosmic Chess Match. This is who I used to be, and this is what I am now. I had sort of a, as Patty Heron would call it, a Paul on the Road to Damascus experience, but I did 31 years ago. A very, very intense, unbelievable experience, which really lasted for about a year and a half, 2 years. Very, very intense stuff going on.
Well, what do you mean by New Age?
Well, what I mean by New Age, I had a guru. My third eye was open. I had spirit guides. I did Carlos Castaneda dream quests. I was at Woodstock, and I did inhale, okay? So okay. You know, that's my background. That's where I come from. You know, I've seen stuff. I know it's there. I know it's real.
Of course. I mean, you know, the human eye can only see 0.01% of the electromagnetic light spectrum. So to think that just because we can't see it, it's not there is ridiculous. But I mean, haven't gurus and shamans and some of this, what people might consider New Age, hasn't that been around a lot longer than Christianity?
Well, not really. Not really at all. And that's, you know, a 3-hour conversation. But when we go back, all these things, for instance, let me back up further. All cultures have a flood legend. Where did that come from? Why is it that the Chinese have a flood legend embedded in their language? Why is it that the Chumash Indians out here in California have a flood legend? Where does that come from? All these gurus and shamans, and, you know, I had my third eye open. I was with a guru. There's power there, but it's demonic power. And that's what's so interesting. Having come through that, and been on the other side of the aisle, I was deceived by it. And then, you know, you run into the real thing, and it's not what you think it is, and it's a whole different deal. A whole different deal.
So like astral projection, opening your third eye, being able to see somebody's aura, you see that as demonic?
I actually get into all this again in the Cosmic Chess Match. I'm not trying to sell books, but that's what, you know, that's what the book's about. And what's interesting there, yes, when you astral project, you're going into the second heaven. And it's a question of who resides in the second heaven. When you do a little smoke that Carlos Castaneda uses, you're engaging in the occult and using occult means to get knowledge, which is illegal. Because you're contacting entities, which first of all, you aren't prepared to deal with. Second of all, you don't even know how to test whether they're benevolent or malevolent. When you look at seers like Nostradamus who practice, divination or scrying, where he would look into a bowl full with water, put himself into a trance by candlelight, again, he's moving into the second heaven. When you look at Edgar Cayce, Sleeping Prophet, same thing. Mayans, 70,000 people ritualistically sacrificed. All goes back to the same source. There's information there and there's power there. I'm not denying that. But the information is skewed. It can get four out of 10 things right, but it can never get 10 out of 10 things right. So the prophecies are always skewed.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate what you're saying, and I know that the Mayans and their, you know, human ritual sacrifices was certainly evil, and you could call it demonic, but I've just never heard the reference before that, you know, expanding your mind. I mean, isn't the definition of a cult just unknown, hidden? So that would actually be considered, and I'm not disrespecting in any way, I'm just trying to get an understanding of this.
Yeah.
You would see, like, someone as myself that practices astral projection or other things, occult-like things that are not ritualistic in any way, just expansion of the mind, you would see that as demonic, and you would put that in the same classification of like the Mayan human ritual sacrifices and stuff.
No, I would say this on a personal level to be extremely careful because you don't know what you're going to contact. You don't know.
Yeah, okay.
And you're unequipped to be in that dimension.
Okay.
And one more thing. And this is personal, just you and me here, all right, that you may contact something that you might not be able to get rid of.
Right. Yeah, you know, I've heard a lot of that stuff before.
Well, look, I deal with people on a weekly basis that have done what you've done and come back with Kleons. Let's call them Kleons, okay? You know, that's part of what we do here is to help people get free from the oppression that they are under.
LA, if you don't mind, I'd just like to take 2 minutes of your time. A while back when Rex had the mic, he was talking to you about Penn State. Now, I want to backtrack here. All right. We had a guest a while back. His name is Harry Walther, I think. And he said that we would see things in the coming end that would be beyond making our hair curl. Let me see how I can word this appropriately. Let's just use this as an example. Back in through social engineering, in order for the powers that be, the Luciferian agenda, for them to sell the lie, they have to take a controversial subject and let us duke it out, fight about it, both sides going at it. And then after a while, nobody gives a crap anymore, and it becomes accepted. Let's take homosexuality in late 70s, early 80s. You know, people were getting killed. Take that boy, girl in Nebraska, and they made a movie, Boys Don't Cry. They killed her. And then there was an incident in Texas, you know, where they dragged the man.
Right.
With his truck. Okay. Now, and they started putting it out on TV. Ellen came out. Rosie came out. You know, now everybody's one happy family. Now they're all getting married. They're adopting children. It's accepted in society. Now, I hope I'm wrong. Dear God, I hope I'm wrong. Back in the 80s, we started hearing about Boys Town. We started hearing about things, you know, periodically here and there within the Boy Scouts. We started hearing about priests. And now let's fast forward to Penn State. Okay, now we have our bomb. Our bomb's dropped. Now we have our big scandal where everyone's going to talk about it and fight about it and go back and forth. Now, Harry had said to me, He says, I'm telling you, within the next 3 to 5, he said, between the next 3 to 5 years, he put a time on this, in the next 3 to 5 years, that pedophilia would be accepted amongst society because, you know, it's like their own, it's a part of their order, their Luciferian order. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you think there's any truth to that at all? I cannot see our society, you know, doing something like that. But you know, with everything that we've been hearing about, reading about, seeing about, you know, it really wouldn't surprise me. But you know, I'll be damned over my dead body.
Well, look, first of all, anything is possible. Anything. If we look at Germany and the atrocities that happened in Germany, that certainly is a proof text that here's a nation that produced Beethoven, Bach, and Mozart, and, you know, it just completely went down the rabbit hole in such a deplorable way as to, you know, how many people died in World War II? 50 million people. Look at the gulags of the Soviet Union. I mean, who could imagine that 70 million people would be slaughtered? You're right. Pedophilia is part of what the Luciferians do. Will it be accepted in this society? Not in this society, no. But what's interesting is that the kids who are up and coming, the 20-year-olds, have lost their moral compass. There is no moral compass. There is no right and wrong anymore for a lot of these young adults. So as long as I'm not hurting anybody, it's okay. You know, it's okay to do whatever you want to do, as long as you're not, in other words, everything is sort of accepted. So in that regard, yeah, it could happen. But as long as there are people like myself around, and obviously yourself, we will cry out against it, and rightfully so.
Because, like I said, I am seeing history repeat itself, like what happened with homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they took a hush-hush subject, and they put it out there, and they just pushed and pushed and pushed until now they got rights. You know, it's accepted in society.
Well, it's not nobody really accepted. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's protected, and for the most part, right. I'm being honest with the most part, yeah. People really just don't give a crap anymore. They don't. And I see, you know, with Corey Haim and Corey Feldman, they're putting them out in the news, and, you know, child stars, how they've been exploited, and it's been hushed. It just seems all too coincidental that all this stuff's been building. And I watch things. I watch for trends. And for me, this is a trend. It's a trend leading up to something more nefarious, just like they did with homosexuality. And I really don't want to believe that Harry Walter is right. But I don't know, man. Yeah, I'm doing a lot of reading and I'm listening to what's out there. And I just have this feeling that this man's right. I hope he's wrong.
Well, again, you know, I hope he's wrong too. But like I said, with the 20-year-olds, there is no, it's moral relativism, situational ethics, anything goes. So it wouldn't surprise me, you know, if this is the next rung on the ladder, so to speak, that descends into the pit, and that's where we're headed.
All right. Well, thank you very much for addressing this with me. Back to you, 23.
Yeah, sure. Thanks a lot. I got a message from one of our listeners that said they were actually born with the ability to see auras. And what do you say to somebody like that can see colors and stuff like that? They're born naturally with that. They just seemed a little bit concerned. So
I would need to sit and talk with them for a while. I need to find out the ancestry, who they are, what the parents dabbled in, the grandparents dabbled in. There's a thing called generational curses. I'm not saying this is a curse, but things will pass down generation to generation. And some of those, in other words, someone, let's say back a grandmother was a practicing witch, a grandmother or a grandfather was a 33-degree Mason. They open up portals and gateways to the demonic. And so I'm not saying that this, you know, this person's gift is demonic. I'm not saying that. But I would need to spend more time with that person. If they wanted to, they can email me and we can open up a dialogue. I need to ask questions, but specifically, what were your parents into? What were your grandparents into? I need to know that stuff, because I would say, without knowing this person at all, there's a door open somewhere back in the past. There's a doorway open somewhere. And so that's why this person was born with that gift, so-called gift.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for that. And when we've been talking, it sounds to me like you firmly believe the 9/11 event was a staged ritual. Is that correct?
I would say there's a ritualistic aspect to it, absolutely.
Okay.
You know, and I realize that that's a real hot button issue with a lot of people, that people can get really, you know, violently opinionated when it comes to 9/11. I just keep pointing to Building 7 like everybody else. You tell me what we're looking at here, folks. You know, no other buildings ever collapsed like that.
Oh yeah, the one that collapsed in its own footprint.
Yeah, Building 7.
Yeah, that's so they said it was from the heat, didn't they? From one of the other towers.
Yeah, but I mean, you wouldn't see a building collapse like that. You would see part of it go, and then a few hours later, another part would go. Come on, that thing fell at almost free fall speeds into its own footprints. That's controlled demolition.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's no question that something was up with that. Whether it was controlled demolition, and you know whether the planes were flown in by a remote control or whatever. There's a lot.
We don't know. We don't know. Exactly. I mean, it's just like the Kennedy assassination, Nat Geo. You know, I just love this. You know, look at who Nat Geo is, all right? You know, Nat Geo does the big thing, and the fourth bullet, and Oswald did it. It's 11 seconds, and we've all been Zapruder, and Zapruder film's wrong. And it's like, you know, please, guys, please. I mean, really, you know, why do you have to beat a dead horse? I don't believe that stuff for a second. I didn't see the program, so, I mean, I'm speaking, you know, kind of in an ignorant way, because I would have to look at the guy's research. But how could all these people be wrong for, you know, 48 years? The fruit of film is what it is. It's 6 seconds. It's not 11 seconds. I'd have to see how he gets to 11 seconds. But, you know, Kennedy wanted to abolish the Federal Reserve, strike one, get our boys home from Vietnam, strike two, and shatter the CIA in 1,000 pieces, strike three. And since then, we've never had a real precedent, in my opinion. You know, that's where we are. It's a managed agenda. Managed agenda.
Yeah, and I've read articles on how all the presidents that we've had have been related to Vlad the Impaler, and I find that quite interesting.
Yeah,
the original Dracula. But now, what about, I don't know if you've seen the movie Knowing.
Yes.
Okay, well, let me jump into a couple of scenes in that movie that came out in 2008. There was one particular scene when Nicolas Cage was sitting down on his chair watching the news, and CNN the CNN was on, and it showed the Gulf oil disaster.
Yes, yes.
Just like it happened in real life, and it was the same date, 4/20. 2010, that's a very powerful numerological number. If people study up on numerology, they know about that. And also in that movie, there was a couple of scenes, and the same scene also with the disaster in the Gulf. There was also a very strange scene that showed the clock on the wall, the alarm clock, and when it hit midnight, at the very bottom, it showed Japan. Which was very ironic, because if you know about the doomsday clock, when it hits midnight, that's when the nuclear catastrophe happens. So my question is, how did they know about this stuff 2 years prior to it happening, and why did they subliminally put it in these programs? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, another one would be the X-Files. What was it, 4 months before the Twin Towers thing? They did a whole the plane and then the Twin Towers. I mean, exactly the same scenario. The Luciferians delight in hiding things in plain sight. And, for instance, there was a commercial last year for the Super Bowl, which I actually traced down and could never get a straight answer from anybody. I actually talked to the ad agency and got, you know, bounced around, just asking questions. That's all I'm doing. And the commercial was, this car, I forget the name of the car, the brand of the car, is on Pacific Coast Highway, and it's captured by a the police steals it from the people, right? So now the cop's driving it. Then this guy comes over with a helicopter and picks it up. But before he can get it, Neptune rises from the depths of the sea and grabs the car. And before Neptune can get it, an alien flying saucer gets it. And now they're kind of cruising on this planet somehow, joyriding the thing. But then there's a warp hole, and the car goes through the warp hole and arrives at the base of the Mayan pyramid.
Right.
I mean, it's so deliberate. It's unbelievable. Now, I couldn't get an answer. I could not get an answer. They would not. And I said, look, I want to know who wrote this and why. Why did they use this imagery? And, no one would ever address it. I mean, it's just amazing. You know, these people that wrote it, they're not available to speak. I mean, they just total stonewall. So, you know, getting back to the question, yeah, I think a lot of this stuff is orchestrated. It's a question of, I don't know how they do it. I don't know the mechanics behind it, but they send these signals out, and sure enough, just like in Knowing, you know, is that just coincidence? I'll tell you something, and I don't toot my horn on this, and I'm not trying to build myself up. I don't get a lot of these things, okay? I really don't. But I had a vision, a dream vision of the BP oil disaster about 2 weeks before it happened. And I woke up from a dream, and I called. I've got witnesses. I've got my wife, and I've got two other witnesses. I got three witnesses, so I'm not making this stuff up. And I called my friend, and I said, you know, I had this really weird dream. Tell me what you think it means. And I told him it was extremely vivid. It was like I was there. I was out at sea someplace on this, like, platform looking out, and from the sea was all this fire just coming out of the sea. But it was, I don't know, volcano? What do you think? And they shook their head, they didn't know. 2 weeks later, I'm watching the news, and my vision is right there, right on the news. And I about fell out of the chair. Exactly what I had seen in the dream was, you know, the BP oil disaster with the rig up in flames. I just couldn't believe it. So, you know, it's interesting. That to me was like a warning dream. You know, I think those have happened before. I'm not the first person to get them. Won't be the last. And I think a benevolent, loving God can give us those in times of stress to warn us of what is coming for whatever reason. But see, that's something I'm not looking for. It's just that he gives it to me because it's a gift. I'm not practicing scrying like Nostradamus or going into a trance. I'm just asleep, and it's a free gift. There's a huge difference between trying to find something or to, you know, trying to use occult means to obtain knowledge and getting knowledge that way, the way I got it, just because he gives it to you. Whole different deal.
Yeah, and I can appreciate that, and I see what you're saying. I don't agree with you on the fact that somebody that wants to seek something for themselves as a seeker is being evil, but I can...
No, I never said you're being evil. I'm not saying you're being evil. You're not being evil. You're a true seeker, and you're looking for something. Misled, perhaps, because you're not aware of all the facts, in my opinion. But I don't want us to be arrogant.
No, not at all. Yeah. Not at all. And you're being great. And actually, I really appreciate your honesty, and you're being very clear-spoken, and you're telling people how you feel. And that's why we're here, man. And I think that's awesome. And I want to get into the vaccines with you for a minute. What are your thoughts on the majority of vaccines?
Well, that's something that I've done just a little bit of research in, not a lot. But I think, well, let me put it to you this way. Will I get a flu shot this year? No way. Are you kidding me? And, you know, we've all heard the stuff with the AIDS and all this stuff. And it's so hard to track some of it. But then other parts and other things with the vaccines, especially the stuff that they're coming out with now, I mean, you know, I just don't trust it. I mean, I really don't. I just don't.
And do you think that they could be possibly using some type of that nanotechnology?
Yes.
Okay. And do you know much about the Zeitgeist movement?
I've seen the movie.
Okay. Well, the Zeitgeist movement is really pushing the collapse of all governments and bringing in a new era of supposed peace and harmony with, you know, nature, where machines will do all of the basic hard work for humans, and they will have a machine literally make all of the decisions for mankind in the bigger scale of things. So I see that as a very sketchy scope to go down, and it's very obvious to me right now that they're pushing this agenda with the nanotechnologies. Now they're admittedly putting gray goo in the food, which is nanoparticles that can get lodged into the different organs of the body, and who knows what kind of problems that could cause. But you look at the movies that they're coming out with now, and, you know, integrating man with machine, and as you're talking, this chip that you think they're going to integrate, the mark of the beast will give people the ability to live 500 years, so why wouldn't they take it? But, you know, could it be possible that there might be so much outcry? I don't know if you knew this or not, but when those microchips, the tracking chips, started getting popular, about a decade ago, the name of the company that founded them was Digital Angel.
Digital Angel, sure.
So.
I know, amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, right. So, I mean, if people don't take the mark, as you would call it, the mark of the beast, you know, wouldn't they just be able to integrate it in with the food or the mosquitoes or the vaccine, so people could be already marked and they might not even know?
Well, I would, that's certainly a possibility, but I think that this is something different. This chip is a whole different deal than this technology. We don't have this technology. The kind of stuff that Dr. Lear is looking at. But, you know, it remains to be seen how it plays out. We don't know, you know, we're on this side of the event, so we don't see it yet, you know. It's like the people on the Titanic had no clue was what was happening. They were on the other side of the event. Once the event happened, it's like, oh, my gosh. And that's where we're right now in a very precarious position with everything that we've talked about tonight. We're still on this side of the event. This is before the mega lever hit. We're still in the old paradigm. The new paradigm hasn't taken over. The mega lever hasn't hit yet. The event has not happened yet. We're on this side of it, but we're headed towards that. And, you know, all we can do is prognosticate and talk scenarios of what may or may not happen. But on the other side of the event, it will become extremely self-evident very quickly as to what's going on.
Sure, and it seems to me that it's getting faster and faster. You know, each year is just bigger and bigger catastrophes. So like you said, we could be very well getting close to the end times, but will it really be the end times for eternity, or will it just be the end of this cycle and the beginning of a new cycle? Let me ask you this about Revelations, because you know, this book in the New Testament I am just fascinated by, and I've read it many times. What it talks about, the throned one being surrounded by these creatures that have wings and animal heads and eyes all over their body, right. and this winged one is in what is called the New Jerusalem, which is
right.
Describes itself as this giant cube that comes down from the heavens or space or whatever you want to call it. In my eyes, it's almost identical to the Borg cube out of Star Trek. The only difference is
probably where they got it, right?
could be. But, you know, what is that about? Because this cube is made out of gold and sapphires and rubies and all of these different precious metals. And it says when it comes to Earth, it will, everybody that's still around will be basically assimilated into this harmonious feeling where there will be no more pain and no more suffering. And I mean, doesn't that almost sound Borg-like, where the emotions are gone and you're, I mean, that to me, it really seems like a physical object coming out of space. Just like I said, just like out of Star Trek, but fancier. What is your interpretation on that?
Well, the new city of Jerusalem, I mean, is a reality, and that does come down at some point. But there, you know, that's in the way in the future. Before then, we'll see the return of the King, just like the Lord of the Rings. We will see Yeshua ride in with the armies of heaven. I mean, this is where it's going. The cover to the cosmic chess match shows this white horse on a chessboard. And the rider on the white horse will come, because that's, I mean, we're in, unless you understand the war that we're in and the two sides and what's been going on, it's hard to grasp things like a New Jerusalem. The system that we're under and have been under for literally millennia is incredibly evil and pernicious. I mean, it is. Look around.
I agree. This place is crazy.
It's and lawlessness rules. And, you know, with all due respect to the makers of Thrive, you know, Mr. Gamble, you know, he's outlining a utopian society. But he never deals, and this is the flaw of Thrive, he never deals with the one basic nature, and that is, or the one basic dynamic, that is human nature, the sin nature, the proclivity of men and women to do the most heinous things to each other. And unless you get rid of that, there's no hope. There's no hope. Having been in the New Age for, you know, 13, 14 years, gurus and all that stuff, one night, true story, I went into the auditorium and laid myself on the floor and cried bitterly because after 3 years of meditation and working and giving everything up for the guru, I was the same miserable, wretched human being and I've always been. Now, I couldn't articulate that in Christian terms, okay? I couldn't say, well, you know, I've experienced light and tasted nectar and heard music and astral projected and did all this stuff, but I was just the same stuff that weighted me was still there. I couldn't get rid of that. I didn't even know what to call it. I just couldn't get rid of it, you know? And that's the deal. That's the deal. When it talks about that, every, you know, that will be made different, what leaves is that what you would call, what I would call the sin nature. In other words, the thing in us that makes us lie when it's in our advantage, the thing in us that will make us, you know, take the $5 when no one's looking, the thing in us that will cause us to look at another woman outside of our wives with lust or covet what our neighbor has, right? Or, you know, strike out and kill another human being because we disagree with them or because they're different or because they whatever the reason is.
Right.
If that's gone, I mean, I'll tell you one more vision because, I mean, look, I get these things, but they're rare. I've had two. One was fairly recently, a couple of years ago, getting ready to go in the shower. So it shows you that. You know, I'm about as far away from doing anything spiritual as I possibly could be. I'm getting ready to go in the shower, okay? Start my day. I'm taken. Bam, I'm out of my body. Bam, just like that. Boom, I'm in another place. 3 seconds. One, two, three, back. Just like that. And I was there. And I realized, you know, some people will say, well, that's, you know, what have you been smoking? Well, I wasn't smoking anything. But I was there. And that's what he does. And it's biblical. And other people have had the same type of thing. But there's an event called the Rapture, and it's controversial. But I was there. He took me into that scene, and I was there in the future. And I was standing, and all around me were people. We weren't packed in like sardines. There was a space of 20 to 30 feet between us. We were spaced out, you know, not equally, but just comfortable. We weren't like sardines. We were all looking forward in the same direction. There was a holy, reverential silence that permeated the scene. I can't describe it to you. You can hear a pin drop. Everyone knew exactly what had happened. No one was going, oh, my gosh, where are we? It was none of that. There was this holy, reverential silence. That's second two, okay? Second three is I had this realization that my sin nature is gone. Bam, I'm back just like that. I felt it. In other words, I felt what, and Paul talks about this in his writings in the New Testament. He talks about this battle between the spirit and the flesh. You know, the things I want to do, I don't do. The things I don't want to do, that I do. Romans 7. Romans is just, you know, a way of addressing the particular letter. You know, that's all it is. It's an address, so you can get there and read it for yourself. But that's all Paul's talking about. He battles this thing. What if that's removed? Imagine that. What if that's removed? What if that's removed from every man and woman and child on this planet? It's a whole different deal. It's a whole different ball game. It's a supernatural event that changes everything. That changes everybody and everything at the same time. That's awesome. That's real change. That's real change. That's
yeah. The future. I mean, I can definitely appreciate that. It's the question I have though about sinning. You know, you, myself, most people know what's right and wrong. We have a conscience. So, right. You know, we know that if you hurt somebody else or do something like that, that's then it's not good. But to those that don't have a conscience, somebody that's born insane and they really have no idea, how do you judge them the same as, you know, I mean, don't you kind of feel that we all are judges of ourselves? I mean, we all know that what we put out will eventually come back. I mean, that's just the law of physics. So, but not everybody knows that. And so how do they fall along the same lines of judgment as me, or how do I as them?
They're judged on what they know. Yeah, they're judged on what they know. That's how a person is judged. He's judged on what he knows, not what he doesn't know. You know, people are always asking, what about the babies in Africa who don't know Jesus? Well, they're judged on what they know 500 years ago, before any missionaries. How can you possibly hold someone accountable for what they don't know? But they're judged on what they know. God knows their hearts, and they're judged that way.
And you believe in your heart of hearts that Yahshua, what many people call Jesus, the same person, just the, I guess it's the right term to put it, his proper name. You believe without a shadow of a doubt that he walked the earth. He was the Messiah. Is that the your savior, so that your sins will be washed away completely and you will be able to enter this rapture or this heaven that you speak of, correct?
Well, let me put it to you this way. That, okay. And I'll go back to forensic evidence, because it's one of my favorite topics to talk about. I speak, of course, of the Shroud of Turin. We've got real forensic evidence of an event that happened 2,000 years ago. And the carbon dating was manipulated. It was skewed. In Watchers 3, we actually talk about that, how the carbon dating was manipulated, was skewed, how the so-called restoration of the Shroud in 2005, in my opinion, was an absolute, it destroyed any forensic evidence that you might have been able to gather, 10, 15 years from now. The woman vacuumed the Shroud, for crying out loud. She vacuumed the Shroud. Hello? You don't do that with a piece of cloth like that, but I digress. The Shroud is unique because it shows the body, the frontal and dorsal image of a man who's been crucified, and he's been brutally whipped. And the nail holes go through the back of the wrists, and there's a spear point in his side, and he's wearing a helmet of thorns. I mean, it's exactly like this thing is. No one knows how that image was put there. We interviewed Dame Isabel Peczek for Watchers 3, and she's a muralist, but she's also a particle physicist. So she brings a unique perspective to the Shroud of Turin, and she just tells us that there's no way this is a painting. It's not. There's no way. It's a painting. She just says, nonsense. This is not a painting. And she theorizes, as from a particle physicist viewpoint, that there was an event, a true event horizon, a reverse Big Bang that created the image when that body was levitated off the tomb, and then simultaneously it disappeared in millions of points of light, which created the image on the Shroud. I call it God's fingerprint, God's calling card. It is truly a fingerprint of the supernatural. And it's been here. Does it change my faith? No, it doesn't change anything. Does it add to it? It doesn't really add to it, but what it makes me excited, because I see his face on the Shroud, and it's a Jewish face, for starters. And secondly, it doesn't look anything like, you know, the Anglo Jesus that we see, sort of thing. But
right.
The scourging is particularly brutal. When you look at the marks, unbelievable. I mean, he was flayed alive, literally. It's just unbelievable what's done to him. And only until the modern age, that artifact has laid hidden for almost 2,000 years, until the age of photography. And only then did it become, oh my gosh, it's a negative. How can that be? How can you create an image that's a negative without knowing 400 years before photography, or, you know, thousands of years before photography existed? You know, people always say it's a medieval forgery. Well, how would a medieval forgerist know about photography enough to create a negative image so that when you took a picture of it, the positive image would show? Obviously you wouldn't. I mean, it's just amazing. Absolutely amazing.
So whether or not, I mean, he Jesus was the Messiah, or this person that was on the Shroud, I mean, absolutely no question, an amazing person, and something incredible happened, similar to what was written about in the scriptures, I guess. So I think that's awesome. Well, let me ask you this. Have you gotten into the Nag Hammadi? Have you read any of the treaties or scriptures out of those texts?
Well, yeah. The Nag Hammadi was, Gospel of Thomas, for instance, and all those lost books, supposed lost books. And, what they're from is they're from a Gnostic school. And, the reason why they were buried there is because these books were deemed heretical. They were heretical because, first of all, the writings are spurious at best, and they go against the teachings of the gospel. See, the gospel's really simple. And here's the deal, because we're coming down to the end of the show. I think I've earned the right to tell you what the deal is. The deal is simply this, that Yeshua offers eternal life to all of us, okay? And we're redeemed by his blood sacrifice on Calvary. So if we believe that he was the one that was sent, that's the first criteria. If we confess that we've done junk in our life, which is not cool, that's the second criteria. So we ask him into our heart, we get eternal life. And then he comes and fellowships with us, and he does do that. And that's the mystery. You want to talk about astral projection and running around, try this. Let me tell you, your life will never be the same, and I mean that. That's the deal. And that's it. There's no other deal. That is the deal. There's no, well, you gotta do, no, you don't have to do. That's the deal. Okay? That is the deal. Now, men and women over the centuries have added to the deal and made to think, well, you've gotta look this way, dress this way, talk this way, act this way, do this, do that, baloney. Don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, do this. No. That's not what it says. It says, you do this and you get eternal life. That's the deal. Believe on him who was sent, and by his blood sacrifice, all of our little nasties are cleansed, and that's it. You got eternal life because you believe in him. And then when you ask him in, he does that. He comes into your life. He does come, and he actually speaks to you. Go figure that. But he does. And that's the mystery of it. That's what turned the Western world 2,000 years ago on its head. And then, of course, it got obfuscated by religion. Now we have to have a priest to tell us what to do. It's never that way in the early church. Never that way.
Well, and I know that one of the most important teachings of his in the New Testament, anyway, is that you should treat your neighbor as yourself. So if everybody treated their friends and neighbors like they wanted to be treated, then you wouldn't have so much hatred and anger and fighting taking place. So I really appreciate that. But didn't he also say to his disciples, you may think I've came here to bring peace, but really I've came here to
cause division.
Right. And so that's another thing that most people tend to forget about.
Well, I mean, when you get into this, it's not a weekend excursion. And, it's for me, it's been 31 years. Okay. And it's just another layer of the onion. And it just goes really, really deep. I mean, it goes as deep as you can possibly think of, and then it goes deeper. And that's just because there's no end to it. And I will be under construction, as it were, until the day I die, learning and learning and learning, until, I finally cross over and see the Maker, as it were, and know as I am known, as Scripture tells us. But, I mean, it's so funny when I'm on some of these talk shows like yours and Coast to Coast or other shows, I know that there's people out there that look at this and think, oh, it's just religion or it's this. It's not. Religion is religion. And, with all the trappings of, like we talked about, stained glass windows and monks and rosary beads and confessions and all the trappings of religion, which have nothing to do with anything, in my opinion. The experience was actually opening a person's heart to the spirit of a living God. And that's what the Gospels talk about. The Nag Hammadi texts don't talk about that. And the whole experience is getting that spirit in you, that right spirit in you. That's the deal. That's what he came and died for, to set men free that way. And that's, I just keep going back to that. That was the greatest decision in my life 31 years ago, and it's just, it's never been the same. And from my talk that I am a frank supernaturalist. I mean, I travel in the supernatural. you know, not every day, but, you know, stuff happens. That's my worldview is a supernatural worldview completely. And I filter everything through that lens of the supernatural, everything.
Sure. Yeah, I know that when I read the texts in the Nag Hammadi, it just had a completely different view of Genesis, Adam and Eve, paradise, the serpent, Noah. It was yet there was a lot of similarities too that I put together also. What do you think about the Dead Sea Scrolls? Do you feel that those are just as accurate as the King James version of the Judeo-Christian Bible?
But, sure. Yeah, but the Dead Sea Scrolls are amazing because that's the Israelis took the Isaiah scroll, and it's the same. 2,000 years later, there's no change. I mean, these guys guarded this stuff like crazy. You know, I mean, they really took care when they made copies of the manuscripts. And that's what's so incredible about the Dead Sea Scrolls. What's interesting is that the Book of Enoch was also found in the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Right.
I believe that the Enoch book and the Enochian account is a paramount use to us today because it talks about the fallen angels. And it gives us a real insight into the antediluvian world. We actually quote chapter 80. I read the whole thing from the Book of Enoch in Watchers 3.
Hmm. Now, but also Enoch, there is what's called the Enochian calls, which what some people might consider magic. What is your interpretation on the Enochian calls? Because isn't that where you can actually make connections supposedly with interstellar beings or what you might call fallen angels?
Yeah, but that is a corruption of what Enoch taught, and that's why you can't go there. Somebody labeled it that. Just like there's a group going around calling himself, you know, like the teachings of Melchizedek and all this stuff. It's all gobbledygook. You know, it's false. How do I say this? It's from sources that you can't trust. I'll be nice. It's from sources that you can't trust.
Okay.
In other words, in order for us to believe or to look at anything, we've got to be able to test the spirits. And unless you can test the spirit, you don't know what you're dealing with. You don't. And if you don't know how to test the spirits, then you're really out to lunch. Because now, how do you know what's manifesting is, you know, benevolent or malevolent? You don't know. So you got to know how to test the spirits.
Do you ever get worried with, you know, once again, I'm going to talk about the abilities that the government has and what, I mean, they have abilities to send, you know, sounds or words or feelings or emotions into individuals. They can change their thought process. They can literally make people schizophrenic, hear voices, think they're hearing God. Project Bluebeam, they can send, send holograms of, you know, Jesus or Muhammad or Mother Mary. Do you ever get worried that maybe you're being duped and that really with as advanced as some of these interstellar beings could possibly be or angels, maybe they're actually playing the system when in fact you feel like you're doing the right thing, but it's all a part of the plan, kind of like what you felt about earlier. You're on the right path with the gurus and the new age. What makes you so sure that you're, you know, willing to give up everything into believing and having this much faith into something like Christianity?
Well, because I have the one thing that separates, the one dynamic that separates Christianity from any other ism or anything on this planet, from any other belief system, is the threat of prophecy. There's nothing else like it on the planet. The threat of prophecy goes from Genesis to Revelation. It's 100% accurate. It calls out events well in advance, and it calls them out with great specificity. Nostradamus doesn't do that. I address all this in the Cosmic Chess Match. They have certain accuracy, but not 100%. And it's only by one man. Where the Hebrew and Christian scriptures together, you get 66 books by different authors, all, as Chuck Messer calls it, it's an integrated message system. And it is. It's an integrated message system. And so I go back to that book daily, and I read what's there, because it's a guidebook to the supernatural. That's what it is. It's called the Bible, which just means book. But what it really is a guidebook to the supernatural. And when we read it, especially after the spirit of a living God's in us, it becomes alive. It becomes alive with meaning, pregnant with meaning. It's amazing what's in there. And the threat of prophecy is happening as I speak. When we look at the Middle East, all this was written thousands and thousands of years ago. And yet we see the stage being set for the fulfillment of many of those prophecies, which is just absolutely astounding when we think about it. It's right there. So I can give myself a mental checkup, as it were, by anything I see or feel. I check it immediately with what's in that word. And if something is contrary to that, then I know I can't trust it. Do you understand me? In other words, it's like if I have a thought that doesn't jibe with what's in the guidebook of the supernatural, I know I can't trust that thought. No matter how, excuse me, no matter how amazing it may seem to be. If it goes against what the guidebook is saying, aha, I need to check it at the door. Because it cannot be right. It cannot be right. Now that sounds incredibly narrow. Right, but it really isn't. It's actually the latitude we have is incredibly broad. But let's say, for instance, just give you one example, okay? Because you need an example for a statement like that. There's a guy that came on the scene recently, no names, who claimed he was the second coming of Christ. Okay, well, you know, without getting into it, I know you're not the second coming of Christ. Okay, I know you're not. But we'll give you the benefit of the doubt for about a millisecond here and just, you know, try to find out why you think you are, at least. Well, he came in the clouds. He came in an airplane. Well, that's not what it says, you know, and the tribulation was already here. Well, the tribulation didn't already happen, and there's no temple, and the Antichrist, I mean, it just goes on and on and on. So that's easy. That's easy for me because I have the wealth of the guidebook of the supernatural.
Oh, no problem.
I can check back to the guidebook and say, well, this can't possibly be it because none of these other things have happened. You're an imposter. I mean, it's a no-brainer. But that's an overt one. But that's the type of – that's how you use it. That's where the guidebook comes into play.
Okay. I appreciate that. Yeah, absolutely it does. We've got a couple of questions from our users, guests here tonight. One of them is from CM Punk. As humans, we tend to think of ourselves as the greatest thing in the universe. In the grand scheme of things, we are insignificant. Why is there even prophecy about Earth changes on a planet that means nothing to the universe?
Well, that's your worldview. That's a very nihilistic worldview that we mean nothing to the universe. Why is it that the guidebook of the supernatural tells us that he knows every hair on your head? That sounds like a loving, caring God to me. If he knows the numbers of hairs on your head, you know, how much does he love you? How much does he care for you? A nihilistic view, just think of how fearfully and wonderfully you're made. No one knows how the DNA, deoxyribonucleic double helix spiral, happened. If Darwin had known it, he would have retracted evolution in a New York minute. We are so incredible. We are the crown of creation. How do you think? How do you know you think? How do you know that you know that you think? You know, why is it that you can hold your arm out? How can you will your arm to move and it moves? How do you know how to run? How does your digestive system work? You know, how is it that we can reproduce with one another? Why is a woman different from a man? I mean, it just, give me a break. I mean, it's just absolutely astounding what human beings are. Astounding. And yet, in some ways, I agree, we are insignificant in some ways. But each of us are fearfully and wonderfully made and have great value. You see, that's a nihilistic worldview, with all due respect. It's like if we are made in the image and likeness of God, then all human beings have worth. All human beings are made in the image and likeness of God. That's why it says in our declaration that we have certain inalienable rights. Where is that from? That all men are created equal and have certain inalienable rights. That is from Judeo-Christian scripture. It sets us apart. Do you understand? It gives us worth. It gives you and me worth. No matter what we look like, we have inalienable rights. We are created equal. Remove that, and now all of a sudden the state will tell us who has worth. Welcome to the Soviet gulags.
Yeah, you're right about that, in the sense that the Soviet gulags, look at the stuff they did. But, you know, even look at our ancestors and what they did to the Native Americans. It was certainly just as bad.
It was very horrible.
It was absolutely horrible.
It was genocide. It was horrible. Yeah. It was horrible. I'm ashamed of it. I'm ashamed of it that we would not. And look how long it took for us to abolish slavery. I write about this in Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. It's right in the first chapter, an apology to the Native Americans, First Nation people, and to the slave trade. Just, you know, but again, we are in this broken, you want to talk about a matrix, we are in this broken evil system, you know, and mankind has a proclivity to hurt one another.
Well, you're right about that. I mean, try going to the grocery store and picking something up that doesn't have some type of toxin, you know, in the food. It's there's poison everywhere. They poison our food, our water supply. They poison the media, the radio, everything. So they must feed off of the dark ecstasy and enjoy watching us suffer. And I don't see it just being for a materialistic view. I mean, yeah, they're going to make more money by giving people pharmaceutical drugs that will cause more problems down the road, but there's got to be more to it than that, and I do see it as a spiritual sense. Like you say, we are literally in a fight with something, you know, whether you want to call that the fallen one or whatever name you have for it, there's something there that obviously doesn't like us around or at least want us to feel good. So it's horrible. It's crazy. And it's definitely becoming more apparent every single day. Every year it's getting worse. So, I have another question here from Fukushima Worker 25. do you believe that reptilians are evil spirits, or do they actually exist in the physical realm?
Well, you know, we've all heard about the reptilians, at least those of us who were in the whole UFO phenomenon have heard about the reptilians. I believe that's what fallen angels really look like. They are interdimensional beings which can manifest in our dimension. How about that?
Okay. Okay. And this one is from Sol9, S-O-L-9. What is your opinion on the guidebook condoning the mass slaughter of innocents by God? And I'm assuming that he's referring to some of the texts in the Old Testament.
Well, again, and I get into this, and look, I keep talking about this because if you haven't got the Cosmic Chess Match, check it out, because I talk about a lot of this stuff, and you can read it for yourself, but I'll give you the answer. The answer is simply this. They were Nephilim. They were hybrids. They were demonic hybrids, which were never supposed to be. That's why the judgment comes down. If you don't understand the fallen angels and the cosmic war, then it looks like we serve this capricious, you know, homicidal, maniacal God. That's not the case. The whole point of the Cosmic Chess Match is to get you, the reader, up to speed with what's really going on. I promise you when you read it, and I would suggest, I've been suggesting this to more people, go right to part two and read part two first, then go back and read part one. Because part two deals with what's happening in the modern era, pretty much. Part one establishes, and you know, there's a lot of scripture in there, a lot of stories. But I guarantee it, when you look at the guidebook of the supernatural, i.e. the Bible, in this way, you'll never look at it the same way again. Because what it is battle reports from a war, a cosmic war that we've been in.